This cup of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustrations by Toba Ushi.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, our dedicated TNG show. I'm Philip Gilfus, sitting in the center chair this week. I've been spending time exploring this galaxy-class vessel we call Enterprise, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chief Engineer Daniel Prue, who is currently the sole person on duty in engineering. How are you doing, Chief? And wait a minute, wasn't there a different Chief Engineer in charge last week?
Yes, I'm actually a little nervous about that. It seems as though, I was actually like fifth in line like 2 weeks ago. So I don't really know how long I'm going to be able to hold this position for, but I guess as long as Wesley doesn't come down here, I think I'll be okay.
Okay. And well, I've already forgotten your name. Nah, don't worry. We'll have a new guy next week. Okay, and I'm also joined by my co-host, Mr. Moser, who is assigned to the battle bridge. And Moser, I understand your job is the AV chief who records, edits, and upload videos on the battle bridge screen for officers to review missions they've missed. How goes it?
Oh, it goes well, Philip. You do remember my first name, right, Philip? Like we went to the academy together, right?
Well, I really don't go to the battle bridge that much, and I mean, it's not like you're going to show up the first time and we're going to see you through the rest of the series. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Now, you do remember what ship I'm stationed on, right? I mean, you're starting to scare me. Are you sure you're not a deadly hologram that's trying to kill me and get information?
Well, moving on, as you can tell from our two introductions, we are talking about a topic that I'm excited to talk about because I'm trying to convert people to my cause, and maybe I'll succeed or maybe I'll fail, and we'll see what my two illustrious co-hosts have to say. But the first season of The Next Generation, which premiered in 1987, you know, a lot of folks and fans who love Star Trek and who love Star Trek The Next Generation, they'll be like, oh, wait, is that the one where Will Riker doesn't even have a beard and they don't have the collars in their uniforms? Don't watch that one. That's terrible. But I'm here to tell you, listeners, that I believe season one, that there is a lot that you're missing if you have that attitude. Because guess what? I used to have that attitude, too. I was like, I'm not going to watch season one. In fact, when I started a rewatch several years ago, I started season three. Because I'm like, that's where I'm going to start. But having done my rewatch this time with season one, there's a lot there, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some highlights of season one, so I'm kind of going to narrow the topics to a few episodes I've chosen, some choice episodes of season one, for me to prove that you're missing something if you're just throwing away season one. But before we get into specific episodes, I just want to throw it out to the other two and see, you know, what their thoughts about season one. Were they like, yay, season one, or are they like, ugh, when do they get the collars? So we're going to start with Daniel first. What's your overall season one thoughts?
I think I'm in a bit of a unique position for Star Trek The Next Generation fans. I grew up watching the show and stuff, but we had the first half of season one on VHS when I grew up. Like, for some reason, we stopped getting the tapes after the first half. So I've seen the first half of season one more than anything else. Like, I've probably seen these episodes, or at least half of them, I guess. Oh my god, I can't even imagine, 30, 40 times maybe. And I'm not a season one hater. I'm really not. I recognize it as one of the weaker seasons, for sure. But I would never like tell anyone to skip it. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff in here that people forget about. But I also recognize that, you know, it's no season three. I'll say that.
Well, that's true. Nothing season three. What about you, Darren? What are your initial thoughts about season one?
No, I think they're really similar to your thoughts, Philip, where, yeah, initially my gut says, oh, season one, it's just, he has all those scripts in the beginning that were obvious rehashes of, you know, TOS episodes. I mean, Naked Time, Naked Now. I mean, it's changed the title at least a little more, Gene. I mean, but I understand that a lot of that really just came from the necessity of the writer strikes and other things going on. So I get that. And actually, today I think I watched 5 episodes of season one, and it was actually really enjoyable. I think with season one, it's probably not best to just watch it straight through. You kind of want to pick and choose those gems out, but if you just focus on those, it definitely has some great Star Trek moments, great introductory moments, and while the overall acting's a little wooden, you can definitely feel season one the most just by the acting. Because I think the actors are definitely getting into their roles. You know, you'll have certain lines that come out that you're like, okay, not just a seasoned actor, but a seasoned Star Trek actor would know, okay, we wouldn't substitute this word. And it just sounds, you know, hokey. But those little things aside, there's some great stories in season one. And I'm excited to talk about it.
When you said wooden acting, I see you're already using the Pinocchio metaphor for season one. So starting right out of the gate there.
I can't even remember.
How easy you humans do it. Well, speaking of rehashed title names, we're going to start with the rehashed title name episode. I've chosen these episodes for a reason, not only because I think they're good, but I've also chosen them because they're picked throughout season one. So I have a beginning season one, a middle season one, an end season one. So the first one I've picked is Where No One Has Gone Before, of course, famously ripped off from Where No Man Has Gone Before, but Where No One Has Gone Before. And just watching this episode again, I have like pages of notes from this episode, so I'm not going to go first because it'll just be me doing a filibuster here. So I'm going to go Daniel first. And I guess, you know, for other fans who maybe don't, you know, aren't remembering this episode off the top of their head, this is the one where they have the guest engineer and the traveler, and it ends up whacking the Enterprise D, you know, the other side of the galaxy and many other galaxies away, and they have to figure out how to get back. And, you know, it's kind of a Wesley episode too, but Daniel, what do you think of this episode generally, and you know, what do you think it brings or takes away from season one?
So it's episode 6 of the first season, and it's, I mean, without a doubt, it's the strongest early season one episode. I've always loved this episode. It's an episode that I used to watch constantly over and over again. There's so much good about it. Like, it's like the traveler is interesting, even if he may be a little rapey or weird towards Wesley. And like Kaczynski is like such a jerk, and you kind of hate him, but then you kind of feel bad for him. And like, but it's such a cool concept. Like, and not to upset our sister show, our To the Journey fans.
To the Journey.
To the Journey.
But. In season one, in the 6th episode of season one, the Enterprise traveled to a different galaxy and still managed to come back in the same episode. I'm not saying anything, you know, I'm just saying. That's all I want to say.
I was watching them and they said, like, it would take us, what was it, like 300 years?
300 years or something, yeah.
To get back. I'm like, this is the Caretaker pilot. Oh my gosh.
What if they just send a message and it'll take like 59 years to get the message?
What if that was the rest of Next Generation? It was just the Enterprise D getting back home. Maybe would have taken, you know, anyway.
but I love this episode. I mean, even though it is like, it's like a really early prototypical Wesley episode, which a lot of people like kind of get frustrated at and kind of don't like. I kind of feel like it's maybe a better version. Like, it's a good example of a Wesley episode where a Wesley episode is done right. Even though we are like beaten over the head with Wesley is Mozart, Wesley is Einstein, Wesley is the most incredible creature.
He is
ever.
A wunderkind of all mankind.
Well, yeah, this is and, you know, when I was watching this, this was, I guess, really the second Wesley episode, because you had Naked Time, Naked Now, whichever one was Next Generation one. But this is the one he did not cause a problem. right? One of the few times he didn't cause the problem, because usually he causes it and then solves it. This one he just solves it. But, you know, he's still Sweater Wesley, and this was the episode where Wesley gets promoted, where he gets made an acting ensign. And so, again, we'll talk about Wesley, you know, in his own show, but it is sort of that interesting moment of like, well, this sets up this character through the rest of the time, and, you know, doing my season 4 rewatch, we'll see the Traveler again in season 4 Remember Me, and again we'll see Wesley, who's now a full ensign, will be working with the Traveler again. So I mean, I think it is an interesting setup for this Wesley character, and I always think it's interesting where like Wesley gets ignored by Riker, but I mean, which I think is like not just because it's Wesley. Like anytime someone's like, "Hey, by the way, that guy's disappearing. Don't bother me. Go back to your studies." I'm like, that's kind of important to know, isn't it? I don't think I would ignore that.
You think it gets called the boy?
If you're doing a drinking episode. Game here, yeah.
What is the boy doing on my bridge, number one?
Oh goodness. Yeah, and what about you, Darren? What were your thoughts about this episode?
Well, definitely, it just opens up with a great sweater episode for Wesley. He's in that brown V style. Oh man, that thing is so atrocious. But yeah, it's definitely like the fan club of Wesley's. Not till Dr. Stubbs comes around are we shoved in the face so much about this wunderkind of Wesley and just how important he is. But I think my favorite character from this episode has to be the pompous engineer, who I've neglected to remember his name.
Kaczynski.
But not Kaczynski. There you go. So not since the captain of the Excelsior have we had someone who is so pompous about, you know, oh my gosh, he just needed a little thin mustache and they could have been, you know, father and son. But, and although in that aspect, it was a little interesting because I really felt like no one on the Enterprise knew how the engines worked. Like even Argyle, even anyone, like they're like, okay, you're on a highly complex starship, you know, in the 24th century. And it literally feels like you're phoning it in. And maybe that's why they just really needed that, you know, chief engineer position filled. But man, everyone was like, really? To reference the JJ verse for a moment, In Star Trek Into Darkness, you have that great scene with Montgomery Scott where he's like, I'm not going to let these torpedoes on. I don't know what's in them. It could throw off, you know, the balance, or it could, you know, interfere with this radiation. And I'm like, that's how it should have been. Like, traveling faster than light is freaking complex, you know, not just boop, boop, boop. I'm going to have my assistant who has three fingers because somehow that's going to make it easier for him to enter things in our future tech buttons. But anyway,
yeah. No. You're forgetting the very important scene where Argyle says, I think it's Commander Riker that asks Argyle, so is what he's saying dangerous? And Argyle's like, I don't know. It's just a bunch of numbers to me. It doesn't mean I don't think anything bad could happen. And then they show up on the other side.
What's the worst that could happen?
The exact, and I wrote this down. This is the exact quote from this episode when Riker is introducing the chief engineer to Kaczynski. He says, this is one of our chief engineers. I'm like, is this an arsenic and old lace situation? Like, it's one of them. You know, we got so many. We have like 12 chief engineers. He drew the short straw today, so he's on duty.
And that always surprised me in season one of Next Gen that they don't have a chief engineer, considering how important Montgomery Scott was in the original series, that wasn't a cast role, you know, right off the bat.
And this is the busiest, by the way, I've ever seen engineering in season one, because usually it's like the one, it's like no one usually is on duty, by the way. But like this one's like, they brought the extras for this episode because all the stations were manned on the bridge. Everyone was buzzed around engineering. They paid money for this episode. Good graphics, which we'll talk about.
I think, doing just some background research, like I think it was the idea was that the Enterprise D was so advanced that you didn't need a huge engineering team. It could just kind of run itself, kind of thing. I think that was the idea.
It was so advanced you needed a team of chief engineers.
Apparently.
Well, and there's, like, later they establish it in a wide shot that there are chairs around the quote-unquote pool table. But before you see that wide shot, it totally looks like, you know, Kaczynski's, like, on his knees, you know, putting in the variables. Like, could I get you a chair here, buddy? Like, everyone else is standing at this table. It's not very ergonomical.
And Darren, you'll be happy to note, I counted two scants in this episode, and one of them was worn by a guy.
This is the favorite pause and look up scant guy in the background. This is that shot.
It was another guy, actually. It was another guy.
Oh, I was thinking of the red scant guy, the Asian guy in the background, where he's like,
oh, yeah,
doing
right.
All points bulletin to the whole crew, and everyone looks up. Now that I think about it, that reminds me, this, I think, was one of the episodes shown in the Fathom event for season one when they were releasing the Blu-ray. And I remember that when that scant shot came up, everybody started laughing. It's just any tension the scene was trying to build just went right out the window.
One thing I thought that was neat about this episode, well, I say neat, you know, this was, and I don't know how far they did this, I'll have to pay attention now in season one, but the episode title was like the TOS, where like it took
it
up
centered,
the whole screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas everything else is just like, you know, margin, left, you know, top, whatever. But it was sort of like had that all. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, again, this is season one, so you can't be like, well, that's just like TOS. Because, I mean, you know, it's trying on its own. Maybe that's the only way to do Star Trek was the way they did
it. How else would you do it? You're
exactly
following an example.
So, I mean, like you said, the story, you know, does make you think of a TOS story. Like, oh, you know, the Enterprise gets thrown across the galaxy or whatever. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's a good TNG story, too. And yeah, you know, a weird alien visitor and, you know, all that stuff.
Now, I mean, not only did they get thrown across, I mean, you're saying it's a TOS episode, but they're getting thrown across the galaxy through the power of imagination. So, I mean, it's very much a TOS.
No, Daniel, that's dangerous. You're too young to be thinking about that.
Don't even speak it. This world's not ready for it. Tear to my eye.
Yeah, it's very, very, very TOS. Like, we get into a little bit different kind of sci-fi later on in TNG, but yeah, this first one is pretty interesting.
And I do just want to put a note on this, because I don't want to spend all the time on it. But the Traveler, you know, the Traveler, I think, is a very interesting character. And I was somewhat sad in Remember Me and then Journey's End, that they really didn't ever do justice to him. Like, justice. They never, like, in Remember Me, he's like, he returns, but I'm like, hey, he didn't really do anything. I mean, other than save today, but, like, we didn't get anything more about him. But, like, I'm like, is this man a Time Lord or a Q? Because he has a bunch of power. Yep. And I would have loved to learn more about him.
I bet you if we had, if TNG was a modern show, like, if we had, what's going on now, like, we would see the Traveler, like, in the background, like, every couple of episodes, like, he would be manipulating
things. The Observer in Fringe?
Yeah, or it would be amazing. Like, he wouldn't be this just three
And he'd be a famous guest actor that gets paid a
yes,
ton
of
to
course,
be there.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Now, I do want to give y'all some time, because we always get feedback from our fans. Talk about the Blu-rays. Okay, well, we want to talk about the Blu-rays with season one, but particularly this episode, because again, this episode, I mean, not only do I think it's a good story, but if that doesn't do it for you, the visuals, and I watched it in standard definition, is awesome. I mean, like, I didn't think,
oh,
like,
it's beautiful.
I'm not like, oh, this is a 1987 show. I'm like, you could, I mean, it may be, it looks slightly dated, but not that dated. And I'm like, just the visuals in standard. So I wonder, like, what does this look like in HD? Because it's pretty awesome, all the bubble galaxy and even just the colorful other galaxy. I mean, we see a lot of cool visuals in the show.
Yeah, at the end, I mean, when they not when they get to where no man has gone before, but when they their first pit stop on being flung across the galaxy, you know, it looks like space, but it looks like almost like they're in a colorful area of space. I mean, there's all these nebulae and things like that. It's not just the stars, and it looks gorgeous. I mean, from that to the, you know, the kind of stretch snap animation of the Enterprise getting kicked into high gear, almost expected it to kind of ride back on its back wheels, you know, as it tries to gain traction in subspace. But yeah, the visuals on this episode, even just like the sped up animation of the warp core pulsing, it just all looks beautiful.
And it made me wonder, because this came out, you know, in 87. I'm like, and this was before Star Trek V. I'm like, why does this episode have better visual effects than Star Trek V?
Oh,
I mean, like, because it's the same content. You know,
I just imagine that in that shuttle crash. Just it looked like it was made with cardboard on a home video. It was so bad.
But the Galactic Barrier in Star Trek V doesn't look that as awesome as the Where No Man Has Gone Before warp traveling galaxy. Oh, anyway, but it's really cool. So I don't care if it's Blu-ray or standard. It's really cool effects. Two quick things I wanted to talk about, unless y'all had something else. One was, I wanted to talk about, and this is all season one for me, but I'll start here, Geordi at the con. I'll try to keep this rant short. I love Geordi at the Con. I love season one Geordi. And, you know, I think he was a great character as chief engineer and did great stuff. You can argue they didn't do a lot with him. But I think if they had kept him at the Con, because he was like the smart aleck on the bridge. He always have a joke. Or here where you made like the sleigh ride. Like, oh, we've been on a sleigh ride. Data's like, sleigh ride? And he's like, ah, oh, what else would you call it, Data? But he always has that smart. He's like, I have this thesis that there's always a smart aleck on the bridge, like Tom Paris or Dax on Deep Space Nine, you know. And when they took Geordi off the bridge, I'm like, oh, they lost it. And there's another episode we're going to talk about where I'm going to talk about Geordi being in red is cool and awesome. But I think this is that first time of where you had a lot of bridge conversation, more than we have maybe later in the series. And so was there anything that in this episode where you're like, I wish we had kept that, or were you like, man, I'm glad they brought light to sickbay after this episode, because otherwise it was this dark room with one bed.
it's hard for me to separate it. Like, it's hard for me to say season one is early TNG and like it has a very early TNG flavor. And then, you know, once we get to season three, which is where I think most people consider the breaking point, it changes dramatically. I mean, we get different lighting, different costumes, different, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's almost a different show. So, I mean, to say, like, would I have wanted Geordi as a con officer the whole time? I don't know. I guess, I mean, I would have wanted Ro as a con officer the whole time, but she didn't show up till much later anyway, so that doesn't really count. I don't know. I mean, I don't. To me, it's like we get one season of Geordi as the con officer, and then six seasons of Geordi, right? He gets promoted in season two, the chief engineer. So it's like it's really hard for me to think of what would it have been like if he, because you know TNG, we never get a stable con officer.
Any final thoughts on this one, Darren, before we move on?
In this season one kind of mini marathon, Geordi, as being on the Con, a lot of times, though, he was moved to the captain's chair a couple of times. And those are actually really cool sequences. So, yeah, I mean, they did get him back onto the bridge, you know, with his little engineering station in the back. But no, I think I could have definitely used more Geordi on the bridge. In those laid-back loungers.
Yeah, put a pun in that. We're going to get back to Geordi in the chair. All right, so the next episode I want to talk about is Data Lore, okay? And, you know, probably the title alone probably tells everyone what it's about, but in case you forgot, this is where the Enterprise ventures back to Data's home planet, which I'll make fun of in a second.
Percy I-8.
Where they find Lore, Data's twin brother, and they put them together, and Lore plays the evil twin, tries to bring this giant snowflake back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, I have notes, but I'll go for y'all first. So, Daniel, you're a Data guy. What do you think about Data Lore here?
I like Data Lore. It's very, very... Of all of the episodes, I want to say it's the cheesiest. It's kind of the 80s-ish most. Like, it's very, like, you know, between the music and the split screen between, you know, Brent Spiner and Brent Spiner, which you might think I might have a problem with, but since Data's actually a robot, it's okay for him to play himself.
He's not a robot. Android. He is an android.
Sorry about
He's
that.
An android.
And he does a wonderful job. Let's give credit to where credit is due. I mean... The like we were just talking about, the Fathom events when season one Blu-ray were coming out, it was Where No Man Has Gone Before and then Data Lore, and there's a reason for it, because Data Lore has some pretty cool special effects with the crystalline entity and stuff, but I like the episode. I really enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun. You know, Wesley, of course, is the only one who realizes Data's acting weird and saves the day again, I guess.
Anyone listen to him? Someone please listen to Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley. But, you know, it's...
Two times, shut up, Wesley.
That's right, but it's still a good episode. It's a fun episode for sure.
Well, you mentioned two things, and I want to bring them up. You said the split screen, but to me, when I was watching this, I'm like... For 1987, this is awesome.
Oh, it
I
looks
can't
crazy.
Tell.
Yeah, it looks great.
I'm like, it's not like yeah. like you look
you,
at...
You can't catch it. It looks seamless.
No, I'm trying to think of the Voyager one. It was their first season. It was a good episode, but it was kind of a bad one where they had the two Janeways, and like you could tell... I know to the journey's yelling at me right now.
It's all about the eye line. If they can't get the eye line right, it falls apart.
But like the visual, you could tell that they were overlapping two images. Again, it's a good story. I just can't remember the name off the top of my head. But anyway, but this one, like, I'm watching this waking, looking for some fake. And again, I didn't rewatch it. I half rewatched it today. But so maybe I don't know if there's like a stunt double you can tell. But I mean, they did definitely know where they cast the camera and to have the actors turn. And it did look, I don't know if it's 100%, but it was at least 95%. Because double episodes are always kind of hairy on how you do the special effects. But it worked.
Yeah, there was one shot with the double effect that I would, if I was making the episode, I would have built like a awesome kind of sliding rig. It's like a 3/4 shot of Data, and this right when they're starting to look at their circuitry, and so he's unconscious on the bio bed, and later they do the top down 2-shot. But I'm like, you know, I think it would have been really fun to build a rig so that you pan over his face, and then, you know, his face is obscured by like a person standing there, and the rig would like slide him out and slide him into the next one so that by the time the camera finishes its pan, he's in the other bed and people would be like, you moved the camera. How did you do that? I think that would have been an awesome shot to just double up Brent.
It reminds me of that gag reel from Firefly. I don't know if y'all have seen where Nathan Fillion keeps moving around, so he's in every shot as the camera spins around to all the cast members listening to the dead guy recording.
I had an uncle who did that at our wedding, and he was in 5 table photos. They took a picture of everyone at every table, you know, for us to remember. And he's in. Apparently, he sat at 5 tables. It was quite funny. But no, this is a great episode. It's a great, you know. Oh no, he's an evil twin.
Yeah, that's
like. Oh yeah.
I'll admit that's cheesy, but it's done well, so I can't argue with it too much. Even though it is the evil twin, yeah.
But it just opens up Brent's acting ability. I mean, Brent is a great, great actor, and you can really tell because, I mean, you realize how good of an actor he is in twofold. And how he plays Lore, because he's playing him basically with emotion or much more human, but even more so as Data, because you realize how much acting is actually required to pretend you have no emotion and that you are an android. Like, that it's double impressive.
And it's almost like if they were going to put like a brother of Data in a movie, they could kind of go back and maybe put Lore in a movie. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it would be kind of crazy if they just made up a new brother for no reason. Like,
that'd be crazy. Yeah,
it would be ridiculous, right? Like, you have this brother that's already existed.
I'm pretty sure Lore made like a dozen of these guys, so they should just be cropping up all over the place.
Next, you're going to tell me they made up a new doctor just for one episode. Never mind. Okay.
For one season.
The only thing that did look fake was Data's head. Or Lore's head.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Looked horrible. But look,
straight from the makeup department. well, this used to hold a wig. Let's put this here.
Now, one thing that made me, when I was watching this episode last year, that made me like, man, it made me really think, like, how much could we have explored more about Data? Because I think a lot of the episodes, like, where we didn't talk about it, but like, No One Has Gone Before, we actually get a lot of character stuff. We get Tasha stuff about her past. We get
who's Tasha?
I'll tell you later, Daniel.
Okay.
It's not a very good ending.
It's a secret.
But you get Worf. You get Picard's mom. I mean, you get these. Like, everyone's like, "Oh, never learn about these characters in Next Generation." Where, like, the 5th episode gives background on all these characters. But then here as well, Data lore. I'm like, one thing I thought was funny though. And again, it's TOS-y, and not in a bad way, but just like Star Trek in general. They're returning to this planet for the first time in 26 years since they found Data. Really? You never thought maybe we should go back to where we found the android?
I wonder how old Brent Spiner is. Wink, wink.
Well, no, I'm like,
maybe
wow.
He is 26.
Like, Geordi just comes down and be like, oh, there's a door here. Like, really? No one thought to look in 26 years, pull out a tricorder.
But Geordi does have his visor. Like, he's really good at detecting hidden doors with that visor, as we know.
And looking out the window. And again, this episode is also cool because Data tries to sneeze, and really, what more do you want by that? One thing we didn't talk about, and we mentioned it, but I want to put a pin on it. season one, and again, it's TOS, and again, I don't mean to be like, oh, look, they were doing this for the first time. What else, you know, again, you can only reinvent the wheel so much. But there was a lot of music in season one, and we don't ever get that much Patish music again throughout the series. But, I mean, it's not bad, but it certainly is unique to season one. And so, you know, what do y'all think about the music we heard? Because I think Where No One Was Gone Before, they used it a lot, and very well, I think. But they just, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. But what do y'all think of the music throughout all these episodes?
I love the season one music. I love the cheesy, synthy, 80s, poppy. I love it. Like, I don't actually like it in most other contexts, frankly. I'm not a big fan of, like, 80s music in general. But, like, on TNG, I don't know what it is about it, but, like, season one, like, I just can't get enough of it. I'm like, keep it going, man. Like, whatever keyboard you're using, this is great. This is wonderful. I think it fits the tone really well. It's just like, I love it. I can't get enough of it.
I know we're not the music podcast like Melodic Treks, hosted right. by Colin, which you can listen to. But because, I mean, really, you don't hear any more, like, I mean, there's always music, of course, in Next Generation, but it's not like, you know, part of the set as much as it is in season one. Really, the only time you ever see, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, the only time you ever hear it is the best of both worlds. I mean, that's the...
Well, so Philip, are you forgetting, but I mean, not to, the best of both worlds is amazing, but music is a pretty big element in The Inner Light.
That's true. And in fact, I was watching a YouTube clip yesterday of Lessons with Commander I forget her name.
My namesake.
It's on the tip of my tongue. You know, with Commander Darren, and they're playing the Inner Light music. But yeah, you know, you're right. But anyway, but yeah, season one music. So I was on Trek Core the other day, pressing buttons about Next Generation, listening to all the music. So again, it is kind of, but yeah, it is cool. So, I mean, I kind of miss it. But on TOS, you know, you can just hear any music from TOS and be like, oh, I know that episode. That's Shore Leave, or that's, you know, whatever. But they
did recycle a lot. I mean, when the Enterprise was in trouble, you always heard like ba ba ba. Like
you do.
Oh my gosh, they use that so much.
And you can tell which episode I'm doing, right? So it's awesome.
But no, the music was great in season one. I did enjoy it, and while, again, just like the actors finding their footing, the music also was kind of finding its footing of how much is too much, you know, where do I accent and highlight the episode. I mean, even going back to Encounter at Farpoint, I mean, I still have that image burned in my head of Picard, like, stepping out of the shadows in that oval viewport, and the music's just swelling as he's, like, staring at us while we hear him talking in his, you know, on his duty log. And I'm like, okay, let's just take this back a couple notches from 12 back down to, like, 8 or so. But, you know, but it's good. It's all good. It's really good stuff.
And I think it's something about data lore. And again, I think it's cool, and people just be like, oh, well, of course they would. But like, oh, you know, Next Generation, they don't do continuity, wah, wah, wah. Okay, in data lore, you have, and I never noticed this because I just watched Brothers recently, but lore, they have him singing in data lore, which I know it's Brent Spiner, but, you know, doing the whole, you say tomato, and then you have lore singing in Brothers, again, when he's beaming off, you know, his little ditty that he was singing to Noonan. And so, like, that's a character trait they kept. And then also, in this episode, not only does you see lore in two more episodes, unless you count Descent as two more episodes, but you also see the crystalline entity again. And so, I mean, again, you're taking these season one elements and exploring them throughout the rest of the series. So it's not like we never see the Traveler again. It's not like we never see lore again. It's not like we never see the crystalline entity again, so...
Although that had to be the largest plot point that I missed in the end of Brothers, when he beams Lore away. I'm like, where did he go? It's like, you literally activated the transporter. You're not near a single planet. It's like, Lore's gone, sir. And I'm like, any follow-up to that?
He's right there. Like, I can see him out the window. He's waving.
Curse you.
Next time,
favoritism.
Data. Next time.
Favoritism. Right.
So I'm just assuming he somehow got beamed over, like, and stuck inside the crystalline entity, and then General Zod style just kind of tumbled away, you know.
According to Brothers, he was in space for 2 years before being picked up by the Packlets.
So you're saying he was in the Phantom Zone? Is that what you're suggesting? I mean, I'm totally okay with that theory. Like, I have no problem with it at all. But
oh lordy! Well, before we go into our Daniel Superman podcast, what's the name of that, Daniel? Do we have a name for that yet?
The Superman podcast.
Yeah,
it would be the Dan of Steel.
Okay, the Dan of Steel. There you go. All great right. one. You can listen to it after listening to Commentary Frack Stars, the Battlestar
right. Galactica
one.
So say
yeah,
we
that
all.
That was great.
All right, well, moving on. Another episode, which I think has a big thing you can make fun of, which we will, but I think there's awesomeness to this episode, Arsenal of Freedom. And for again,
on Stardate 417.98.2.
Exactly. And let me do the recap for those who don't remember. So the Enterprise gets caught, can't move, or they beam down, and they're getting attacked. I'm trying to remember all this here. Basically, Picard and Bev fall into a big pit. Riker and Yar and the rest are getting attacked. Geordi's in charge of the Enterprise. And then that's they find it
like a boss.
Exactly. I'm going to get to that. And so, eventually they find out, oh, it's just this planet that sells weapons. And then when they say, oh, we'll buy it, which is kind of like the Royale now that I think about it, it ends and they move on. But anyway, okay.
Did you do a lot of buying in the 24th century with no money?
No money. Yeah.
no credit checks anymore. I will say one thing before I let y'all attack this episode. Geordi in command. I mean, oh, this is also awesome because he is the boss. He is in command, and that's the reason why I hate that he got shunted to the yellow uniform and chief engineer. Like, I mean, I get okay, he showed leadership, so then he can lead the team down in engineering. But I'm like, oh, to me, he's almost like the Sulu. Like this man, we see him being a captain, which according to the at least Voyager alternate reality,
to the journey,
become a captain. But you can see the command ability right here. The red shirt, like, I wish they kept him in the red shirt the whole time, and because you have Troy kind of counseling him on his first command. I think it's so awesome. And then one more thing I'll say before I let y'all attack it is this episode is also, you know, people are like, oh, they don't know how to tell stories on TNG. Okay, they have three stories going on because you have Geordi story, you have the Picard Bev story, and you have the Riker away team story. It's almost like Disaster where we've centralized all these characters and we get to see how they react. So that's why I think it's awesome. What do y'all think?
Well, just to tag on, I'll start just a little bit with Geordi. I really like the not fallibility, but like. You know what I mean? Like when he's talking with Counselor Troy and the fact that he shows that he is nervous and he is not 100% sure. And I mean, there's that, they set up that moment where he calls that guy to the bridge and you expect him to.
Oh, yes. What's his name?
Engineer Douchebag. Is that who you're talking about?
No, he only says his name 500 times and it's the full name. What is it? Oh, somebody look it up.
To Memory Alpha. But yeah, but when he's talking with Troy, it's just such a great, you know, scene, because that just makes me appreciate and love Geordi all the more, because, you know, he's not, hey, I get in the center chair. He's like, oh, dang, I'm in charge of this entire ship. And most of the senior staff is not on board right now. Data's down there. I mean, pretty much all the senior staff are not there except for like Worf. But no, I really like that. That humility that Geordi displays, I think it's really done, especially when he mentions the crewmen of there's your window, Philip.
Chief Engineer Logan.
What's his whole name? Because he says
that's all it says here. Can we,
Bob Logan?
If we're gonna talk, Bob Logan. If we're gonna talk about this, let's talk about how Chief Engineer
he
Logan
ran to the bridge
apparently.
You know.
But he's like, all right, you're in command of the saucer.
No.
Of the captain's yacht. Wow.
Of the captain's yacht. Okay, but this is important because Chief Engineer Logan is a lieutenant. At this point in the series, Geordi is a lieutenant junior grade. Are you telling me with 1,000 people, you have no lieutenant commanders on the ship, or even more senior lieutenants who can do this job? Are you kidding me? Like, this is
and it's not just that, you know, there's no lieutenants, it's that there's I mean, all the other lieutenants are literally being attacked during this time. Like, it's the most critical of times. They're not just off shift. They're being attacked.
Now, see, this is the episode where they're like, all right, all TOS fans, you're all like, oh, why don't you send the captain down? This is what happens when you send the entire cast down. You have Lieutenant Ensign in charge of the entire ship. This is why we don't do it, people, okay? That's why we keep the captain on the bridge. You know what happened this whole time TOS was in charge? Crewman Third Class Smith was in charge of this flagship, okay?
So when you were talking, Philip, about, you know, about Geordi being in command, I was kind of thinking and considering, like, do we see every member of our crew, you know, the seven main cast members, we see them all in command at some point, right?
Yep, you are.
And they all do.
Oh,
they all
poor
do.
Yar.
Who? Who?
Yar who?
And they all do fairly well, right? Like, I mean, do we actually see Worf ever in
Worf?
Command? Except for when he assumes command.
Yeah, an emissary. And later we'll see him, you know, in command of the Defiant.
But in TNG,
in the Star Trek universe, he is.
But in the show that matters.
He was the lowest ranking one, so that's why. But even he got a couple seconds time there.
I'm keeping a list
of all the commands that Riker's turned down. So the Melbourne, the good ship Lollipop, and you know. Oh man, that was a fun moment of, you know, he's just messing with that guy who looked super creepy and suspicious, even if he was a good friend. Man, he was just giving off a vibe.
It goes to show you, all of his friends who graduated with have commands of their own. What's going on, Will Riker?
Yeah.
Man, I hope we do a podcast about that soon.
Dot, dot, dot.
But anyway.
One of the things I really liked about this episode was that they used the saucer separation as an actual tactic. And it was like, hey, we're getting pummeled by this thing we can't see. Let's actually separate. And I know that this is something that we planned on doing more, like, fairly consistently. But, yeah, and it worked great. And the Battle Bridge is such a great set. It's just, you feel how it's kind of slimmed down and utilitarian. And when... you know, you see it re-entering the atmosphere. I mean, again, talking about the Blu-ray, seeing that saucer separate and then swing around, and you have these really close shots of the Battle Bridge section, and it's, oh man, the visuals in space on this episode were great.
Yeah, and we get to see some junior officers that Lieutenant LaForge is now in command of, who's now the bridge crew or the battle bridge crew.
Ensign pep talk and miss I don't know what button to push.
That's what happens when you leave the entire senior crew off.
That's so true, yeah.
This was Lower Decks before there was Lower Decks. But again, we don't ever see anyone else, blah, blah, blah.
I expected them to all do a jump freeze frame at the end in excitement. That's what it felt like when they're all like giving each other the look like, good job. Yeah, I'm going to blog about this.
No, but I just feel like, and you guys, maybe you don't feel the same way, but I feel like if all, yeah, Captain Picard and Riker and Data and Crusher and all of these people, Yar, they're all on the planet. I feel like there are at least...
Who?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there are at least 2 to 3 backup teams of commanders and lieutenant commanders who can replace them. So it's like, no, you don't instantly fall back on your lieutenant junior grades. Like, we have these other people who can fill in.
Well, there's only a few people who are on the command track. So you had to have the red shirts. You don't want, you know.
No.
Now, it's interesting because there was a senior officer on that bridge. Lieutenant Commander Troy.
Yes.
It would take a disaster before she took command.
and
they had to literally move her bigger quarters, so she had a bigger closet, so she could have an actual uniform in it.
All right, now let's talk about the elephant in the room. There is a horrible visual effect in the show with the weapon. It's not that good. We'll throw it out there. It's not that good. It reminds me.
You have the little
pachu
floaty thing.
It reminds me of the TOS, we're referencing it so much, a Shore Leave episode where they're showing, like, here's the scanner that's scanning the crew right now. It's like, that's what it reminds me of. Like, where's the string? I think I can see it. But beyond that, I think the story is still strong. Because you have Picard, Bev, you know, what's going to happen between those two? Will they, won't they?
Which, again, I'm just saying the stickler part for that part.
Pressure.
apparently no one else on the Enterprise knows anything about medicine at all. Not even a correspondence course, not even basic training. Like, he was moving her broken leg around like it was silly putty. I'm like, come on, man. Come on. I'm just saying.
Oh goodness. But anyway, but it is one of those, when I watch these season one episodes, they really do make me think, like, oh, they did think about that and show that and what could have been. And anyway, all right, well, let's
one last point, sure. Though, I think with the, like you said, the floaty shooters of death were, you know, not the best special effect, but one of the special effects I noticed that actually looked really good was at the very end when Picard's trying to talk down the hologram salesman, and you see the display that's showing the two blips. It's actually pretty impressive again for 1987. Like, the blips are moving and the boxes around him is changing, and you see the little floating, you know, triangle representing the probe. And I'm like, okay, that actually looks, I mean, for a show where we've talked many times about the displays feel so static, and to see that, I'm like, okay, like, I actually buy that this is a computer that's controlling everything and that's scanning these two. And he makes the call of like, oh, I think these three dots might represent their way team. And I'm like, I would totally, you know, come up with that assumption based off of what I was seeing.
And I do love that character actor who plays that salesman. That's a very funny casting there. I mean, he works. It's funny, but that's right.
He does. He does. He's like, excellent.
Don't you want to see any more? No, I buy it. I buy it. Let's end it. Anyway.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, let's end it with one of the stories that ends season one, because Neutral Zone is terrible. Conspiracy.
Whoa.
Oh, it is. It really is. Look, I will admit there aren't some great ones. Not because of the wrong ones. Daniel,
don't replicate me a guitar.
Exactly. But anyway, the conspiracy. Talking about the good one. Conspiracy. So now I know Daniel's the order, but because he loves this episode so much and it means a lot, Darren, I want you to go first. So what about conspiracy? Because I know this is one of your first episodes ever. So what do you think?
It was either the first episode ever, or it's definitely the first one I remember, because it gave me nightmares. The end shot where the guy's head explodes and then his chest melts away to show the evil alien, like, it was pretty, pretty scary. Which, now that I'm thinking about it, oh man, my memory is just, I vision green aliens and squiddy aliens and they're eating basically, which I think would later become Ferengi
grubworms,
beetle grubworms, but at the time. But no, this was a great episode. And what I love about it, at least through research and history, it seems like this episode was actually setting up. I mean, we talk about continuity again in TNG. This alien menace was supposed to return in what eventually became the Borg, that they were supposed to be a more insectoid type look. And it wasn't until decades later, we had the technology to create, you know, insectoid type, you know, main characters. And it, you know, the writers changed and it went a different direction, and we got the Borg, which are, I think, vastly better than a puppet, you know, what it would have been like, some sort of puppet, insect army. But man, the mystery, I don't know. The three captains are like, oh, yeah, no one's going to report that three, four Federation starships just showed up at this random planet. All the thousands of people on board aren't curious at all that, you know, it's just us four, you know, wink, wink. Let's, you know, do the secret handshake. And but no, I even throughout the nightmares, though, it was a great, great start to TNG for me.
Have nightmares ended, Darren? Do you still hear the voices?
It said one moon circling. And I didn't know what it meant forever and ever.
Now,
you
bring it up.
Who are you? Where are you?
Now, you bring up continuity, though, and I'm blanking on the episode title, because this episode was set up by a previous episode in season one, and I'm blanking on it, because that's when the commander, Jerkface, comes and to investigate, and he finds out, oh, they're all awesome. And then that's when they finds out later that, oh, and conspiracy.
And they did reference that. Yeah, yeah. The Admiral Quinn. Admiral triangle across his belt that punched out Riker.
I was about to say, Darren, after watching this episode as a little boy, did you take your vitamins? Because you're like, man, I could be like 78 and punching out Riker.
I think I could really tell it was a stunt double that did that roundhouse kick on Riker.
And Worf.
Like, there's no way. And Worf, yeah. Well, and the how every time the power goes out and they got to open those doors and they got to put the little thing on it and push the button and they got to struggle, man, Geordi just flew through that door.
Like, it was,
oh, that was great. But and I was kind of sad, though, that Worf didn't kick his butt, because I know it's... Okay, if we want to show that they're strong, you know, they kick Worf's butt. But honestly, I would have liked to see Worf actually be the one that takes him down, because Worf should be portrayed a little more, you know, as badass. Because
he was the security chief by now.
Yeah. Oh, wait, what do you mean? Yeah, what happened that made him security chief at that point? I don't. What are you saying?
Yahoo.
Doom, 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 doom.
Data, something's got me!
Legacy made no sense to you, did it? Okay. But yeah, no, it was...
I really should have put a little more context around that. Sorry, Daniel. I know it's...
Oh, goodness. But yeah, I mean, conspiracy to me is not necessarily, to me, one of the stronger stories, but it works. I mean, again, because I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm only choosing the good ones. I'm going to choose a good flavoring sample here of season one. But yeah, because I think Neutral Zone, it has issues. But I mean, but I think conspiracy here was that their attempt, right, to have this almost an arc. I mean, they kind of planted the seed earlier with the episode I'm forgetting. I'm sorry. I wouldn't yell out the episode. I'll hear it. Earlier. And then now they have it here in conspiracy. And which I think it maybe they were kind of forced to rush this up sooner than they wanted to, but I mean, yeah, very, very good. I mean, this is what Star Trek: The Next Generation can be about. It can be these big ideas. You know, the first time returning back to Earth, right? Because this is where the conspiracy is, in the heart of Starfleet, which apparently Starfleet's only run by three people. But we'll put that aside for a second.
The creepiest three men ever. Oh my gosh! When they're on that phone call, I'm like, okay, I'm getting some serious vibes off of these guys. And he asks, Counselor Troy, what do you sense? Well, I'm sorry, their thoughts were drowned out by, you know, the population of Earth. I kind of couldn't filter out. I kind of kept thinking that.
Would you like some mealworms?
And Riker just digs in, because Riker's a trooper.
Oh, Riker takes one for the team.
He really does.
He never breaks character at the costume parties. It's great.
He'll eat Klingon food. He'll eat grub alien slug food.
Well, and another, I took a lot of notes on this one. I mean, they have the great 47, 47, 47, 47, 47 reference, where it's like, it is number 47, no denying it. Oh, episode 47, yeah, it's, oh my gosh, there were so many 47s in here. But my favorite flub, which I didn't catch before, I don't know if you two did, but there's a moment where Picard's like, okay, increase to warp 6, and LaForge is like, aye, sir, full impulse.
Yes, I have caught that before.
And I'm like, yep. And I was like, wait, full impulse, that doesn't make any sense. You basically, he's like, okay, bring us about, aye, sir, jettisoning the core.
Mr. LaForge, you make a terrible con-off, sir. Oh, we do have an opening in engineering.
That's what happened. And then the other part was when they finally beam down and they meet the three admirals, you know, face to face, and the one guy gives the Vulcan salute, and I'm like, you were a Vulcan? I totally didn't even catch that. I mean, because he's got the shaggy, a little bit of shaggy hair, and I'm like, oh, okay, looking closer, you do see the ears.
Romulan.
Like, wow. I did not even catch that until you gave the symbol. I'm thinking, is this just a universal greeting we use, you know, at the Federation, you know, lounge? But
again, I have to imagine, you know, that there's some vindictive TNG writers who are getting angry faxes from TOS fans during that year. They're like, fine, you want a Vulcan? Here's a Vulcan. Now we're going to shoot him with a phaser. All right, shut up. No more Vulcans.
And then the Emperor's swivel chair at the end, you know, where he's using his giant iPad wall, which that's a beautiful image, that kind of sector zero, like the Federation sector map. That's a beautiful, beautiful one. But yeah, it is like the most dramatic swivel, like, oh, in this giant room, again, way to use space. But
and they blow him up. Let's talk about it. They blow him up. And you have alien body parts going everywhere.
Is it the most? Is it
and the
most
the great stop motion animation crawling?
is it the most gruesome little, thing we creature. See in Star Trek? I think the only thing that may compete is the Star Trek II ear scene, right? Like, is that really?
Yeah, yeah,
that's it. Like,
I'm trying to think.
I mean, a lot of Star Trek V. Oh, you're not talking about that one.
Oh, right, right. Not, I mean, not.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, that was. I think. I mean, there was a whole brouhaha about, like, can they even show this episode or at least that scene? Just because, I mean, back then.
I mean, it's ridiculous to watch now, but it is. I mean, it's still a little unsettling.
Gruesome, I guess.
Didn't they sometimes censor it with, like, putting more of an explosion, like, over his face so you didn't see? I mean, it's very, you know, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Melty Face.
Melty Face, yeah.
You see, like, his skull and then bloom. And,
yeah, you do. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Really weird, like, really, really dark territory for Star Trek. Like, much darker than usual.
That whole episode is.
I mean, and the ending, right? Doesn't it end on, like, oh, did he get a signal out?
Ding, then ding, you ding, hear ding. It. It's, going towards that one nebula that's over there. No, it's definitely dark. I mean, especially that part in the beginning when the captains are all standing in the cave and they're all, like, man, they're about to shiv someone because they're really, really suspicious. If I was Riker, I would not let Picard beam down there, because that was, if Picard's going to be killed, that's where it's going to happen, like down in a cave. And he didn't beam down with a phaser. He's like, Data. I love that line. He's like, Data, one does not beam down to Starfleet headquarters armed, and Data's just going, oh, shoot.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, any closing thoughts about season one? I know there are. Daniel, we'll start with you. We picked some episodes, but I mean, you know, what, obviously, I don't know. I picked the good ones. I didn't purposely pick bad ones. I purposely picked some quality ones, but also throughout the season. But kind of, what's your season one? You know, you get a new person who's like, I've listened to this Earl Grey thing, and y'all are kind of funny. Not really, though. I want to watch TNG. You know, do I start at season one, or do I start at season three and work my way back? What would you advise, Daniel, about how fans who either have seen season one, don't really remember it, or haven't seen it at all, how would you recommend they handle season one?
Yeah, well, to me, I'm kind of a completionist, so it's like blasphemy to suggest that you would start with a better season. Like, I mean, I guess it's a nice idea, but it's like, no, you should start at the beginning because, I don't know, that's the beginning. So, I mean, yeah, unfortunately, as TNG fans, I think most Star Trek fans would agree, we kind of start out the weakest. And Star Trek in general isn't known to start off with both feet on the ground. And even on top of that, I think a lot of people would say that TNG kind of stumbles a little bit out of the gate, but that's okay. That's okay. I mean, because season one to season seven is a big journey, and it's, you know, to the journey, right?
To the journey.
It's not about the destination.
Wrong content.
It's about the journey. It's about, like, how you get there, and, like, you know, season three to me is where it's at. Season three is where the show really finds itself. But you can't really understand season three unless you've seen season one and season two, and not to say that they're terrible seasons, they're not as strong. But there's so much story and so many good episodes. Like, I can't say season one's a terrible season, because even if there's five great episodes and 17 terrible episodes, I would still think it's worth watching for the five great episodes because they're so good. And I actually think it's the ratio is not that bad, but. So I would never suggest that anybody skip season one. Watch season one. Enjoy season one for what it is. Understand that it's very flawed, but it, you know, it came out in a time when TV was in a place where it was okay to not really know where you were going at season one. Like, now we're kind of accustomed to, you have to hit it. You have to hit a grand slam out of the gate, or you're done. You're canceled. You're out. But no, TNG wasn't like that. It existed in a time where it was like, as long as we had good ideas, as long as we were just, you know, aiming, you know, for the stars, we could fix any problems in season two or season three or season four. So I don't love season one, but I don't hate it, and I think that it's important. So I say watch it.
All right. Darren, what are your season one conclusion thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely I think we said it better back in Earl Grey episode 11, Trek on the First Date. I think we talked a lot about good starting points of TNG, and some of those are, you know, in season one. I mean, Encounter at Farpoint, we've discussed before, is a great pilot, and like, I really like what Daniel was saying though about the time it was in, and you're right, it was this big experiment of, could Star Trek come back without Kirk? And I think our generation kind of misses a lot of that subtlety that was there, because we didn't necessarily grow up with the original series and the whole group of people that were like, oh, you can't have Star Trek without Kirk. So in context of that, you know, season one is a great start to what became, you know, an amazing Star Trek series. So it has some great episodes. It's been really fun kind of rewatching it today and catching up. And I definitely want to, you know, go, I'm going to pop in my Blu-ray some more and watch through some more of those good, the good ones. I mean, yeah. And the bad ones, you can laugh at them. Cause I mean, every show, every series has good and bad. And
Angel One,
you know, I did watch that one just for, honestly, cause I couldn't remember it, cause I had barely watched it so many times, but, it's a couple of, it gives us that great snowball, you know, on the holodeck. But anyway, no, it's good. And they're, like we've said, the characters are feeling themselves out. The effects are feeling themselves out, you know, the music, but really it's, think of it this way. If you were to start with like season two and consider season one, almost like behind the scenes of like how the show was being developed and how people are, you know, piecing together, not that you'd ever package it like that, but if you looked at it like that, you know, we'd be eating it up. We'd be like, oh, look, this is how they introduced this character. Oh, look, this is how they explain more about Data. So we should just consider ourselves lucky. We get the good episodes and the great, you know, the great stories that come out of season one.
And if you start at season two, you'd be saying Beverly who?
Or Yahoo.
But anyway, yeah, you guys have really said, I mean, the reason that I'm doing my rewatch of TNG, so of course I start at the beginning. But like, I really, if you like Next Generation, and even if you like Star Trek, I really think there's a lot there, because to me it almost reminds me of the original series, where you have this sort of cartoon version of like, oh, you know, Spock just says things are logical and McCoy's yelling and Kirk's firing phasers and kissing women. But like, you watch it and there's way more than, there's way more detail, or there's way more time of like, yeah, where you just see the crew hanging out and being, it's not even part of the story. You just see more of that universe. And that's,
memory focuses on the cliches.
Yeah. And I think that's
not,
yeah. And that's season one, Next Generation. You see, like, to me, I'm fascinated by Geordi season one story, because I'm like, oh, he was cool. I mean, not that I'm saying he wasn't cool and as chief engineer, but I'm like, he did a lot. He wasn't just there pushing buttons saying, you know, I'm setting course and let's go, and wasn't it cool to have a blind guy steering the ship? I mean, he actually was doing a lot of cool stuff other than just looking out the window. But I mean, there's so much more in season one, and Yar, I mean, you know, that, you know, all these things that could have been, and you know, like, oh, well, Riker doesn't have a beard. I mean, no, Riker is still cool in season one. And there's just so much that I would definitely, if you were like me just a few years ago and like, I'm not watching it, rewatch it again. Give it a second chance. And if you don't like it again, then we're just all liars, I guess. I don't know. What do you want?
So do we get a second verse to our ever popular Data in Red? Is this LaForge in Red?
Well,
it even works. LaForge in Red.
Well, you know, it's been awesome to talk about season one of The Next Generation this week, but that's just one of the many topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Janice Rand.
And Rand braces for impact against Kirk.
If I were on that bridge and I needed to brace for impact, I would totally grab Kirk.
I'd grab Rand.
You'd grab Rand? All right.
Yeah. Well,
different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Earl Grey.
Missing 24th century technology.
How about like a gun that shoots hypo sprays?
No, I assume you mean it shoots out the the chemical.
Ow!
There's like a little mechanical thumb that dispenses it.
The Ready Room.
Affliction and Divergence.
Yeah, the other interesting thing about that, though, is to compare the Klingon ethics with the Section 31 ethics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there are some groups within the Klingons who maybe don't feel exactly the same way, But then there's this group within the humans who feels completely different. And you kind of wonder what the Klingons think maybe about someone who wouldn't do this.
The orb.
Implications of genetic enhancement.
And our scientific advancement is picking up pace all the time, our technological advancement. I think the urge for us to artificially enhance ourselves is going to be too great for us to ignore.
To the journey!
Resolutions rewrite.
Overall, this is a great story. It's about like love and loss and about moving on and not being able to move on, and it has some baddies at the end, you know, and it's good.
Come on, this is why Harlequin paperbacks get sold.
Commentary, Trek stars.
Iris Stephen Bear, Crash.
I love Iris Stephen Bear. As much as anyone can love a television showrunner who they never met.
Oh, okay. All right, that's good. That's good. I'm glad you put that on the end there.
Warp 5.
Xenophobia and the Coalition of Planets.
Justification in his mind is that the Vulcans were observing us. Mm. They knew the war was happening. Mm. They didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, it really wasn't the place of the Vulcans to step in and stop World War III.
Literary Treks.
James Swallow, the Poison Chalice.
Everybody in this story is dragged into a situation they don't want to be in. And that's kind of where the title, The Poison Chalice, originally came from, is the idea that, you know, Riker is given this promotion, which on paper sounds like a really great idea, but it's a poison chalice. You know, it turns out that it's not what he thought it was. And in fact, you know, he's being dragged into something that he doesn't want to be involved in.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
All right, check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on all the platforms, to include iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can go directly to the website and stream and download files. Just visit trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory to get all the links. And if you'd like to share your thoughts on Season 1 or anything else that we talk about here on Earl Grey about the Next Generation, just go to trek.fm/contact, and you'll see there's a form there. Just choose the Send a Show option and choose Earl Grey, because that's the name of our awesome podcast. Any message you do there will come to all three of us by email. You can also choose the tab on the right-hand side of the page and send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. We still haven't got one. We'd love to hear from y'all. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. Of course, in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. All right, Daniel, if anyone wants to talk to you about any evil Android twins you might have, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, Twitter would be the best place. They could find me at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
And Darren, if any listeners want to talk to you about the variety of scans they can order from you, where can they reach you on the internet?
They can go to scantman1@gmail.com. No, sorry. No, that's not true at all. Please don't go there. But no, they could find me on Twitter at Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Or they can catch my other podcast, The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, where we're discussing sci-fi novels this month.
All right, and I just listened to the episode, and it talks about that star. What's that other series called?
Oh, Star Wars.
I can't remember.
Stargate.
Yeah, it's very similar.
And y'all can find.
It's in another galaxy, far, far away. That apparently we traveled through on our way to.
That's right.
The edge of the universe.
Oh lordy! And you can find me on the internet on Twitter as well at NC Public Servant, NC like North Carolina. And you can talk about all wonderful things there, including the new sci-fi series we'll be starting, Yahoo, where the security chief keeps regenerating.
Who?
Exactly.
Who?
Before we go, we'd also like you to please support our sponsor, who makes it possible for us to bring Earl Grey and the other shows here on Trek FM every week, Audible.com. It's a great way to read all the books you've always wanted to read, and Audible is a premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classic to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. There's so many Star Trek books available on Audible, and two of the books that are next generation oriented that I've read, and hopefully you all would love to listen to, which I would love to listen to too, include The Devil's Heart, which is read by Gates McFadden, who appears in season one, of The Next Generation. Not in season two, though. And Q and Law, read by both John DeLancey and Majel Barrett, who both appear in season one on multiple occasions. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today and catch up on all those classic books you haven't read yet, or the latest novel from your favorite author. So just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting Earl Grey and Trek.fm. Also, if you want to help donate to our cause and help us to continue to bring Earl Grey to you each week, you can go to our website to get your alien badge and art prints featuring original illustration by Toba Ushi. You'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each and every week across the Subspace Network. So it's been a great time, guys, but I have to figure out how to get out of this uniform. It's kind of tight here. You can unfortunately see a lot. I really want to get to something a little bit more looser where you can.
Is it cold? Is it cold there, Philip?
It's what can I say here? It's a polar vortex right now. So we thank everyone for listening, and make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Engage.
Fire.